This week's shiurim have been sponsored Le'ilu Nishmas Reb Chaim Aaron ben Reb Shmuel Zecher Livracha. Kof Beis Adar, Monday the 4th of March, Dr. Sholem Springer, The Enigma of Chukim.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We are in, so to speak, the afterglow of Shabbos, which was this time Parshas Kisiso, and we have an amazing sort of confluence of different topics here coming together, because Kisiso deals with the Parsha of the Egel, and then we had Porah Aduma, because it's Parshas Porah, and we know that Chazal tell us that the two are connected, and this year it came together, you know, through our calendar. And we've also got Matan Torah, of course, because we had the second Luchos. We got the second Luchos on Yom Kippur. So there's another aspect of coming together. And why Parshas Porah is located in this time of the calendar, Chazal tell us, is because of Tum and Tara, and Klal Yisrael was meant to become Tohoya in order to be ready for the Korban Pesach. So what I'm going to try and do is bring all these topics together in some way, and we shall see how the connection works. Let's start with the Chukim. Let's start with Parshas Porah. And it says, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe ba'alaron le'emo zois chukas ha-Torah. And Rashi tells us, Lefisha soton v'umas ha'olam mo'inim es Yisrael. Chukim are very important to us and have a special role, because the Soton and the Umas Ha'olam, Moinim Es Yisrael, taunt, they ridicule Klal Yisrael. That is, they look at it as our Achilles heel, and we shall see it's very, very different from that indeed. And so Rashi says, that's why the Torah tells us, Zois Chukas HaTorah, I'm telling you right at the beginning, before we even start talking about it, it's a chayk, and it's not going to have an explanation, not as an afterthought, but right up front, says Rashi, that Ein lo chashus l'hari achareo gezeir hiel melefono Ein lo chashus l'hari achareo, that of course we can study it, we can spend our time learning it, we can look at it, the chukim, that's a mitzvah, but you must never get into the mode of l'hari achareo, which means to query it, to question whether this is sort of authentic, whether it's real, whether it's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really commands us to do. So that's how we begin looking at the Chukim, that there's something to do with the way the Goyim look at us. And in the Yotzer we said, Chukko Chokakti Gezeira Gezarati, so we emulate what Rashi is saying, that this is a Chuk, and that is something that is to be done without any question at all. Iyatar Shoi, Lava Al Gezeiroisai, you have no permission to be over on the Gezeira. And it's very difficult, because even Shlomo HaMelech, who understood everything and knew all about the Chukim, this one he didn't know about, although this one becomes the representative of all Chukim. He said about this one, I thought I was going to become a Chacham, I was going to understand, this one has escaped me. Porah Aduma is something that I never could understand, for reasons which we'll discuss a little later on. The Shaila arises, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want this mitzvah to be hidden? Why? What is the reason why he didn't want us to know the answer? Why did he hide it from Shloimeh as well? Cleverest of all men, as we are told. And evidently there is a special kavana as to why the Rabbeinu Shel Olam did not want us to have access to the Talmud of this mitzvah. Now especially as later on in Devarim, we have the Chukim mentioned in relation to the fact that this is going to be held up among the nations as something very special to the Jewish people. And we'll go through the Pesukim a little later on where it's more relevant to what I want to say. But we know that the Chukim are very important to us in the eyes of the nations of the world, and therefore surely we would have made a better job of it had we been able to explain. If anybody asks us the question, we'll tell you what the reason is. The fact that we can't tell a reason, we know it's going to be important in the eyes of the goyim. So why didn't the Ribbono Shel Olam tell us the reason? Why does he keep it hidden from us? And these are the psukim, Eli Madati Eschem Chukim Mishpatim, Kashvani, and says that this is going to be Yi Chachmaschem Ubinaschem Leinu Amim. So we know we're going to be looked at from the point of view of the goyim about this. So the more I know about it, the better I can answer my questioners. And, you know, having been in the world of work, you know, or we know, certainly I know, having come from there, that sometimes you're asked a question, and if one doesn't have any answer at all, one looks extremely silly. And it once happened to me that somebody else was asked a question, and he didn't know the answer. He was a Yid, perhaps not of our ilk, perhaps, but he didn't know the answer, and he felt embarrassed. He came to me, I told him the answer, he went back. And I realized then the importance, you know, of education. You should be able to make a good account of yourself and be able to have the basic answers for what you do and your practices. And of course, one of the answers is there are certain mitzvahs for which we don't have a reason. That's perfectly legitimate. That's why Rashi says, it says chukkah up front. Before we begin, I'm telling you it's a chukkah. Okay, that's the background to that. But our kasha still stands. Isn't that the best reason to give us the reasons? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to keep it secret? Especially as we are told, La'asid lovoy, when Moshiach comes, we will be given the reasons for all the chukim, including the poradum. So, in fact, of course, we know we are given a shtickler reason. Rashi brings Moshe Adarshan in Parshas Paro in Chukas and says that the poraduma is there in order to be mechapa on the egel. Brings a marshal. A cleaner goes to work in the palace, and she hasn't got any creche facilities, so she's got to bring her little baby into the palace with her, and she puts him into a corner, go and play there, and they come to her a little later on and say that your little baby has made a mess in the palace, so bring the mother and let the mother clean up the mess. So Rashi says this is a moshel for the poraduma, because we made a mess, so to speak, at the egel, and that is a child, a young cow, so let the mother, let the poraduma come and be mechapa. So there is a little bit of a reason given, but we know that the main problem about the poraduma in particular is the contradiction. The fact that it's metama toherim, metaya tameim, so this is a contradiction. How can the same substance do something which is the very opposite? You know, one often says, it's not so difficult. That question's not so difficult. You know, take a medicine, for example. If somebody has high blood pressure, okay, they take a medicine, and it lowers the blood pressure. But if a healthy person were to take a medicine, it would be unhealthy for him. So where you've got an example in the physical world of something that does the opposite. It's a wrong model. Because what the problem with the poradumo is, it does the opposite. In other words, it's matai to meim and smtama to hirim. So therefore, it does the opposite. That's something we don't have. The blood pressure pill, what it does, it lowers the blood pressure in both the people, the sick and the healthy. Only the one who is sick needs it, and the one who is healthy doesn't need it, and it can put him in a dangerous situation. But in fact, it does the same thing. So it's not a good moshel to answer the question of this contradiction. So the contradiction remains as it is. And therefore, we have this deep contradiction. We do not know the answer to what's going on. The Be'er Yosef suggests the following approach. Maybe, he says, you know, very, very likely, that the reason why we are left with problems that we don't know the answer to, and these are official problems, we officially don't know the answer to it, is in order to train us not to be influenced by what we don't understand. It's part of our upbringing, part of our training as a Yid, to be able to live with a problem. You know, in Yiddish we say, "Fanakasha shtamnisht." Yeah, I mean, maybe that's trivialising it a bit. What the Be'er Yosef is saying, there are things in the world that we are given that we don't understand, and we know we don't understand them. And the fact is, that makes very, very good training indeed. Shelo yovoy lahare acha midos dinoy shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu indeed had this problem, not necessarily with this, but with other things. The Kvar Bikesh Moshe Milifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why this Sedra now comes in again, in our whole quest to find out the reason, because we had Kisiso this week, and there's a parasha in the second time that Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain, the second 40 days, he was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was trying to get forgiveness for the Yidden who had just done the Egel while he was up the mountain on the first occasion of the 40 days. and he was davening, and he was being very successful. We go through that parasha, and Rashi tells us that he was so successful, that's what prompted him to say, Hareini Noas Derochecha. It had nothing to do with the question, forgive the Eden, or the plea, forgiving the Eden. It's just that Rabbeinu Shalom acceded to everything Moshe Rabbeinu asked for, in all the various guises. Therefore Moshe Rabbeinu sort of jumped in, so to speak, says Rashi, and thought he'd actually score another hit. And he asked Rabbeinu Shalom, Hareini Noas Derochecha, Hareini Noas Kvaidecha, maybe he'll give me the secrets. So Rashi says, and then the Forshim tell us, that there were problems behind that, that Moshe really wanted solved. The old problem of Tzadik V'Ra'aloi, Rosh V'Toivloi, bothered Rashi. Yesh Rosh V'Toivloi, Yesh Rosh V'Ra'aloi, Ulifidiv Rebbe Meir Shom, Loi Nosson, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tshuva Al Shelosai. The Rabbeinu Shalom refused to give him an answer on that. The other man Domit that held that in fact, on that Shaili, he was given an answer, but according to Meir, he was left and was only told, Ela Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'chanoisi Yesesha Ochoin, Afal Pishein Hogun, says Rashi, that I will be good, I will have chayin for the person I decide to give chayin, even though he doesn't deserve it, V'richamti Yesesha Arachim, and I'll be merachim on those that I decide to be merachim on, and Rashi says once again, Afal Pishein Hogun, even though he doesn't deserve it. That's all the answer that Moshe Rabbeinu got for his conundrum about Tzadik V'Ra'aloi V'Rosh V'Toivloi. So he didn't get an answer for that. So Moshe Rabbeinu wanted the information. And nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Shalom refused him the information. And we shall see that it's part of a pattern that the Rabbeinu Shalom wants to inculcate in the human being, the fact that we can live with a conundrum, with a difficulty. Of course, not everybody rose to the occasion. The Gemara in Kedushin tells us about Elisha ben Avuya, later on called Acher. Elisha ben Avuya, there are a number of different stories in the Gemara as to what exactly happened to him. The most famous one is the one about he saw a child being told by his father to go up a ladder and do the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. Now on both those mitzvahs, it's got a promise in the Torah about Merachi Yomim, that you'll live long. And the child went up and did the mitzvah and then he fell down and was killed. And that made Elisha ben Avuya sort of review his whole life. That's one of the stories. Another story is that he was reading Greek literature, and when he bent down, all his books fell out of his pocket. And this one is the one I'm going to quote, that Lishne de Chusvis Hamaturgum Chazor de Havagorele Dova Acher. Now, he was one of the Asorah Harugir Malchus, this Chusvis Hamaturgum. And he saw the tongue of this gentleman, this very, very great man, the Chutzpiz HaMatargum, he saw it lying in the dust and a dog was eating it. And he couldn't understand, how is it? And his expression was, Oma, Pesh Hippik Margolios, Yelachach Ofo, the mouth that produced such wonderful pearls of wisdom of Torah, now I should see that same tongue being eaten by a dog should hit the dust. And that's what turned him. So there are lots of stories in the Gemara as to what exactly is the reason why Acher turned. But the fact is that he did not manage to stand up to the nisoyon of not understanding something and nevertheless living with the fact that there are things we do not and cannot understand. As far as he was concerned, if I can't reason it out myself, then it becomes invalid. And that is not the derech of a yid. What we're learning from our study of the chukim is that is the very opposite that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, that we are a nation that in fact can take on us upon ourselves things we don't understand. And so therefore, we have this as a basis. And it's to habituate, to accustom us, that we do not understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways, the inner workings of the Rabbeinu Shloim, we cannot understand. And therefore, we can still live with that, and that's what makes us a yid. And when we're given the chukim, that demonstrates in a very practical way that we have to accept that as a concept. And here we have Echok. The mitzvah of Pora Adumo is one that actually contains a paradox, and therefore there's no escape. So for example, in the case of Shatnas, or take any other of the chukim, whether it's Macholos Asuris, whether it's Kashrus, which is also one of the chukim, we don't know why we're not allowed to eat a pig, or why we're not allowed to mix Bosa V'Cholov together. We don't know why. The Torah says not. But the fact is, I can accept that I don't know the reason. So in other words, I can't apply any logic to shatness. I can't say, well, it's illogical. There's nothing illogical about it. It's a command that when wool and linen is mixed together, I'm not allowed to wear the garment. So I can't apply any logic that would contradict it in any way. However, when it comes to the Poroduma, I've actually got something that logically militates against this particular mitzvah. Because on the one hand, it's Matayat Ha'irim, on the other hand, it's Matayat Ha'meim, and therefore this is a logical impossibility, and therefore I have the problem because I can apply logic to it, and the logic does not stand up. And therefore, it's a much deeper type of chok than all the rest of the chukim. So therefore, that's why Poroduma is the representative chok of all the chukim. And indeed, we need it. We need it because the Poro Aduma is taka matayat tameim, and we become tomei when we touch a tumah, the tumah of a mess. We touch a mess, we become tomei, and the Poro Aduma corrects that situation. So in other words, the Poro Aduma has got some connection with the fact that there is Misa in the world. The fact that there is Misa, that necessitates us having a Poro Aduma so that we can correct the tomei that we suffer from. And therefore, we will need the Poro Aduma for however long there is going to be Misa in the world. And therefore, we'll see a little later on that when the Misa disappears, as I mentioned at the beginning of this year, L'osid Lobai, we will be given the reason for the Poro Aduma. Why? What's the difference between L'osid Lobai now? The answer is, because when Misa disappears from the world, then I won't need the Poro Aduma anymore, as it is, and therefore, in that way, that since there's no more Misa in the world, I won't need the Poro Aduma in the same way, and therefore I can live with the reason being given to me. The Rambam has got a klal, which the Chinuch uses throughout all his mitzvahs, and he says that our actions affect our emotions and our thoughts. Normally one thinks of the other way round, that your thoughts and your emotions, they impel you to do certain actions. But it's a rule in the Chinuch which repeats many, many times, and I'm sure it's been repeated many times, this concept, because it is the whole fundamental of Yiddishkeit, and the whole reason why everything is based on mitzvahs marsiyos, is because our actions, even if we don't feel like doing them, influence our thoughts and our emotions. It's meant to put us in a certain mood and mode. Last week was Purim, maybe somebody had some bad news, chas v'shalom, hope not, but the Chazal tell us, you know, do things that a happy man would do, drink some wine, put on a funny hat, dance around, and you will feel happy, even though there was no reason for you initially to feel happy, and, you know, all the other things that we need to do. Tisha B'Av, you may have had some just wonderful news, and nevertheless, go in shul and sing Eicha in a mournful way, and you will feel sad. So our actions influence our thoughts and emotions. A very well-known klal of the Rambam. So when we practice, the Poro Aduma teaches us how to behave in this Hanoga, which is incomprehensible. It's a new lesson for us. I can deal with the incomprehensible, and it nevertheless will not rock my emuna one bit. And this is a lesson for life, of course, because frequently in our lives and in the lives of others, we ask the question, how could this have happened? How is it possible that such and such can happen? And, you know, this is a great tzaddik and this terrible thing happened to him. But all of this inculcates us into understanding that we don't understand the ultimate reason of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I'd like to bring an example to bring all this together, the idea of not being able to understand everything. We have it in a very, very interesting medrash. That is a medrash that we say in connection with Matan Torah. Hence we have another connection with the Seder, which deals with Matan Torah, albeit the second Luchais. And Umi lo nugodo and Rabbi Akiva, says the Gemara, the medrash says, Shomar olav dvorim shloi nigla lemoshe nigla Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was given things to expose and to teach that were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Chol Yoko, Ros, or Einov, Rabbi Kiva v'Chaberov. They were the greatest generation. Yet, when Rabbi Kiva died, as we know, he died a horrible, an awful death, where they combed his flesh with iron combs. And Achiyotza Nishmosa Be'echod, he was saying Shema Yisrael, and when he came to the word Echod, that's when he died. The Malachi Ashores were completely stunned by this, and they said, "Zu Torah, v'zu Schayra. Is this the reward for learning Torah?" Kiva was the greatest, and we shall see what Rav Yishlam said, because there's more to that medrash. It's got a few parts to it. The Gemara Menachos tells us, "Om Rabbi Huda, Om Rav, B'shoa she'ala Moshe l'moroi motzu l'akadosh baruch hu sh'ya yoshev v'koshe k'sorim l'oistios. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Rabbeinu Shalom was weaving these k'sorim for the letters of the Sefer Torah. Omer l'fono, Rabbeinu Shalom, mi ma'akev al yodcho, omer loi odom echot, she'osid, yesh o she'osid liyos b'sof kamadoyros v'akiva ben Yosef Shemoy. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's going to interpret this? Who's going to learn this? And he says that it's going to be Akiva ben Yosef, this great Rabbi Akiva, in the future. She'osid lidroi shall call koitz for koitz, tilim, tilim shel halachas. From every little tag on all of the letters, he's going to derive lots and lots of different halachas. He's going to be a great darshan of the Torah. Omer l'fono, Rabbeinu Shalom, heruli, says Moshe Rabbeinu, show this man to me. Turn around. Moshe Rabbeinu sits in the eighth row, at the back, so to speak. And he was listening to the learning in the base of Medrash. Rabbi Akiva was darshaning, and he couldn't understand what they were saying. Toshash Koyche got very depressed about it. Yeah, he became very weak. When Rabbi Akiva said something, one of the pupils asked a question. Where do you know that from? He says, Rebbe. And Rabbi Akiva said, "Amal hem alochel moish misinai, alochel moish misinai." Ah, when Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, this yashvadatei, he became sort of alive again. He became happy the fact that he's quoting me and he's quoting the Torah that I brought down. Even though he doesn't know the answer, he accepted it as something that Moshe Rabbeinu said. Chozer bolif and Hakadosh Baruch Hu amafonu. Rabbeinu shalayim yeshal chodav kozer va'ata noisin Torah al yodi. So you got this great man. Why do you bring the Torah through me? Bring it through Rabbi Akiva. This is a gezeira that I've decided that you should bring down the Torah, you Moshe Rabbeinu, even though there's going to be a man like Rabbi Akiva who will darshan all these things and is possibly in some respects even greater than you. Omar Lafon of Rabbeinu Shalom, Harisoni Torosa Harenis Chore. Please, you've shown me the Torah that he learns, now show me the reward that he got. And of course, we have this story that we already read. He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, turn around. He turned around. He saw that they were weighing up, they cut him up, and they were weighing his flesh in on scales. They were sort of selling into the marketplace, or presumably his dog food or whatever. Same loshen as the malachim. So, Boshem says, it's a gezeira, don't ask any questions. So even Moshe Rabbeinu was being taught the fact that you don't understand everything. And why we've read this whole Midrash is, we've got only a few examples of exactly the same thing. In the same way as the Talmud, who asked the question to his Rebbe Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva said that we don't know how Moshe Rabbeinu brought it down, and even though I don't understand, it's a lawful Moshe Mishinai, I can't work it out for you, this is how it is. So you've got one example of the same principle. Then Moshe Rabbeinu later on, who says that, you know, I can't understand the fate of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbeinu Shalom says, that is a gezeira mefonah, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to accept it. And the fact that the Torah was going to be given through Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand it since he got the gate of Rabbi Akiva, says to Rabbeinu Shalom once again, same principle, that this is a gezeira mefonah. So, we have this principle, I think, very well established. I want to bring in, now that's as far as we are concerned, we need not concern, and that is our attitude to chukim. There is actually also, I'll call it an existential point of view. And that is, and already mentioned, the fact that it has also got a view from the angle of the goyim. Let me bring you a sort of simple question. When we read, when we lined the parasha of Chukas, and I quoted the Rashi, very famous Rashi, that Lefisha Soton, the Soton Umas Olam, Moinim Es Yisroel. They taunt Klal Yisroel. That's what she says. Lefisha Hoyo Ashvotim, sorry. Hasoton of Umas Olam, Moinim Es Yisroel, Lefikoch Amru Chuka. Ein Loch Rishus Lahare Acharov. You've got no Rishus to query the Chukim. However, we have another parasha. So in other words, what are we saying? We're saying that the Goyim will use Chukim to ridicule us. So we'll be ridiculed by the people outside. Yet in Devarim we have the following. I'll read them through quickly because time is going to beat me otherwise. Reini madati eschem Chukim v'mishpatim svein v'eschanon. See, I've taught you Chukim v'mishpatim kashet sivani Hashem elokoi. As Hashem has taught me, so I taught you. So Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the people, of course Devarim is Moshe Rabbeinu's speech, I've taught to you these chukim just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught me. Lasses came bekevra oz hasher atim boim shomer rishto. So you can do them when you come to Eretz Yisrael and carry out these chukim and mishpatim. Ushmartem, you should guard them, vasisem, and do them. Hi hi chochmaschem, ubinaschem le'enei amim. Because this is going to be held up as your chochma and your wisdom in the eyes of the people. So the goyim are going to look at us and say, this is amazing. They have got these chukim and mishpatim. But in fact, it doesn't just chukim and mishpatim. Ashi ishmur and skola chukim. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, it's the chukim, so we've dropped the mishpatim now. So what is going to be, in the eyes of the goyim, respect for the Jewish people? Chukim. Well, that contradicts what Rashi said before. Yeah? Is it going to be a sign of ridicule? Are the goyim going to use it to ridicule us? Or are they going to hold it up as an admiration? Yeah, these are great people, very intelligent people. Chokhmasim ubunasim, your wisdom and your intelligence. Vomru, and they're going to say, so the chokhm doesn't, the apostle doesn't stop there. Vomru, rak am chokhm v'nomar goy godlozeh. The goyim are going to say, this people are something special. They are chokhm v'novoin, they're bright, they're intelligent, and so we are. Yeah, we are. We have a long history of academic achievement, the Habdil, yeah, great Talmid Chachamim, wonderful scholars, and on the other side, whenever Yidden have concerned themselves, involved themselves in secular studies, whether it's law, medicine, literature, whatever you take, the Yidden have excelled. So we are an intelligent nation. So what about this contradiction between the Rashi in Chukas and these Psukim in Devarim in Vers Chana? Let me put it this way. In fact, Rashi gives us a hint as to what's going on here. Rashi says that Yichach Maschem Ubinaschem Bezois Techoshvu Chachomim Nevoinim Leinu Amim. With your Chukim, that's when the Goyim will think of you as great Chachomim. And then Rashi says the following: Rak Yishom Alecho Pentishkachas Advarim. It's possibly later on, which I didn't read. Oz Kishaloi Tishkachu Aisom. When you don't forget the mitzvahs, Vasit Sisum Alamitosom, and you do them sincerely, you do them honestly, then techoshvu chachomim nevoyim. Then the goyim will look at you and say, ah, this is a nation of great intelligence. V'im te'avzu aysa mitoy shikha. If you start forgetting about the mitzvahs, then techoshvu shaitim. They'll think of you as fools. Now, I put it to you in the following way. Put it into context of very recent history. I could say that the most famous photographs that came out of the Holocaust, there are two, which everybody knows. The one, the most famous probably, is that little, sweet little boy, yeah, holding up his hands, and there's a Nazi behind him holding a submachine gun. Apparently they say it's Rabbi Lau. That little boy is Rabbi Lau. I don't, perhaps. Anyway, that's one of the famous photographs. Who does?
That boy.
Oh, it's not Rabbi Lau. I see. Okay, wherever it is. That's one. The second most famous photograph, everyone knows as well, is when you can see this Nazi shaving off a beard of a Hasidic Yid, and there's a ring of Nazi soldiers around him, and they're laughing their heads off. They're throwing back their heads and laughing their heads off. So you can see an actual demonstration of what Rashi was talking about in Chukas. You know, the Goyim will taunt you. You know, so coincidentally, Bid and Payas is one of the Chukim, actually. So you can see the Goyim laughing at one of our Chukim. They're taunting us. Yet the Chumash says that it will be Binaschem or Chavmaschem, etc. They're holding up in admiration. So which is it? And the answer actually was given to us by Rashi. You know, when the Eden keep the Torah, and the Eden put their faith in the Ribbono Shel, for example, comes Yom Tov time, from the base of Mikdosh, you load the family onto a wagon, and you say, gee up, and the horse clip-clops out of sight. You can imagine that all the farmers are doing that. Everyone's getting oil regel, yeah, at a Yom Tov, and the Goyim are rubbing their hands. All the Eden are leaving, all the borders are unguarded. And you can imagine what's going to happen. Immediately over a hill and out of sight, the Goyim will rush in and take over Eretz Yisrael. What actually happened? The Ribbono Shel Olam guarded those borders, and they could get to the border, and they couldn't get any further. So what do they say? You know, how is that? The Ribbono Shel Olam is protecting them, or they know something that we don't know. It's the Chukim. The Goyim will have the admiration for Klal Yisrael, all the things that we try to do to them, and the Ribbono Shel Olam protects them. Why? They know something we don't know. They know how to press certain buttons that we can't press. It's the Chukim, so we will be held up in admiration because we're keeping the Chukim. On the other hand, when we don't keep the mitzvahs, as Rashi says in Tavsu, and not the time to talk about it, Victor Miller does talk about it, and he says, you know, we've got this romantic image of Eastern Europe before the war. That's fantastic, at yeshivas, at Chofetz Chaim and Gedolim. Not so. Of course, there was Chofetz Chaim, there were yeshivas. But in fact, Yiddishkeit was going downhill, very steadily downhill. And he says on one of his tapes that his Rebbe took him to the top of the hill where they saw all the Yidden streaming to work on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And it was terrific on Challah Shabbos on a grand scale. Girls wouldn't marry Yeshiva Bochrim. Didn't want to know. The girls were extremely ignorant at that time before Sora Shnira, etc. started educating them. They didn't want to marry Yeshiva Bochrim. That's why you got these very old Bochrim in Litvish Yeshivas. They couldn't find a Shidduch because the girls refused to marry these Yeshiva Bochrim. Klal Yisrael, or rather Yiddishkeit, was on a downhill path at that time, says Rabbi Avigdor Miller. And, you know, the Holocaust, I'm not making any connection, that's not my business to do, but the fact is that we were at a time of Golos, and therefore the Rabbi Yisrael was telling us something. At the moment that we decide to let go of the mitzvahs, that's the point where the Goyim will say, look, you're an intelligent people, you're bright people, and you're doing these primitive things. Why are you doing these primitive things? And that's exactly what was on that photograph. Where we are vulnerable when we're not keeping the mitzvahs, we're not keeping the Torah, that we are vulnerable to the accusation that what you're doing is primitive, what you're doing doesn't make any sense. So as long as we're doing it and it makes sense because the Goyim see the special protection of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then everything will make sense to all of us, even though we don't understand, we can live with it. But if we're not keeping the mitzvahs properly, then we are vulnerable to the taunt that you are doing something that is completely incomprehensible. And this puts it into this special context, I think. And one other item in the last 60 seconds, in fact, you know, because we're coming to Pesach, why Parshas Porah is here? Because of the Korban Pesach. And in fact, when we look at the Chochom asks, said he asks about all his knowledge, about Eidus, Chukim, Shpotim, very knowledgeable chap, doesn't say a word about Pesach. Not a word. His question does not contain a thing about Pesach. He just wants to know about the learning. And he does so to his elders and betters, to his father, to his teachers. And what do they answer him? They answer him about the chukim. Yeah, after the afikoim, after the Korban Pesach, you can't eat anything else. That's a chuk of why you're not allowed to do that. So tell him about the chukim. No mind about the learning is very important. But the learning is only in context when he understands that the main thing is the chukim. So we even have that aspect here. And of course, I wish you point that a kosher and Pesach, may our chukim come home to teach us that some things are incomprehensible and nevertheless we can live with them, and that's what really makes us into it.